Watch The Atheist Experience live Sundays at 4:30 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/ytaxp and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callaxp.
It's time to get sexy on Secular Sexuality.
And welcome to Secular Sexuality, the ACA show that is sad to announce that our friend and guest for tonight, Diana Anderson, is out sick. So we won't be able to host the conversation with them that we were looking forward to until sometime in the future. Instead, we have for you a completely half-baked conversation with all of our half-baked opinions and half-baked predictions about the future, where I am joined tonight by my co-host, ex-Christian Aaron.
Hi.
And Kara Griffin.
Hey. Glad to be here. It was unexpected, but exciting.
Yeah, super glad that you were able to fill in. And honestly, I'm looking over our notes. I'm laughing at the conversations that we were having as we were putting all of this together. And I'm pretty damn excited. I think this is going to be a good time.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Well, tonight's poll asks, will 2023 be a better year for sex positivity? You can weigh in live in the comment section. We've got a poll going there and catch the results near the end of the episode. And in the meantime, we're going to give our very best completely half-baked predictions on the sexual trends and possible trials of 2023. So if you want to weigh in, you can give us your thoughts, questions, or maybe your own predictions. The number is 512-991-9242 or call tiny.cc/callsex because the show is coming right now.
All right. Well, it is the very first one of 2023. It's been a while since I've seen y'all. You've had all this time with family, all this time to get sick and tired of family. So what's been turning you on? Aaron, let me start with you.
I feel kind of weird about adding my family last couple of weeks to the thing that's turning me on this week. Because you're right. I have been home and we have four kids. I have two of my own, but I had a friend with her two kids staying with us over the Christmas holidays. So it was wild, but not in the way that we're going to talk about tonight. So
sure.
What's turning me on this week is actually something that was I didn't expect because I had downloaded an app and it's called Dipsy. I'm sure many people have heard of it.
Yeah.
I downloaded it on my phone in the fall and forgot about it completely. Never tried it. I maybe opened up the first like page and then I forgot about it. And then I was looking over, you know, my credit card bills and stuff and I realized I'd paid for a whole year subscription. And never used it. So I'm like, well, we'll give it a try.
And get some money's worth out of it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's actually pretty great. It's totally like different than I expected. I've listened to other, you know, audio type books. This one is different because they're short stories and you can totally get your preferences in there and explore different things. And it was really cool because it kind of chooses these different stories based on what my inputs were and has suggestions. And the stories are short, like 10 to 15 minutes long, but sometimes there'll be like a series. You can actually get like an hour and a half long story if you're coming in late enough into like the releases of each episode. Anyway, it's a pretty cool app. Definitely something a little different than I've had ever used before. And kind of glad that I accidentally bought a year subscription to it.
Yeah. If folks are new to erotic audio, I have to say, I think it's one of the most underutilized aspects of media, really. I think that there's so much value there. And while we're going to be having a conversation sometime next month with folks from like Gone Wild Audio on Reddit, which is a major source of those kinds of things, I get that going into like the world of Reddit and like hardcore amateur erotica, it can be a little intimidating. I totally get that. I think Dipsy is a incredible, like very soft, gentle, sex positive introduction to these kinds of things. So I really appreciate you bringing it up.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to, I think I'm on like episode 4 or 5 of this one that I really liked. So, and it was suggested to me. So I didn't have to scroll through Reddit trying to find something that I really was interested in. And I can listen to it without blushing if I'm walking around the house doing something. So,
Well, Kara, so what's got you worked up right now?
Yeah, so I'm going to turn over a new leaf this year, as it were, and not mention a book at this point in the show for once. I know, right? Don't worry, I've got more books for y'all later. But I'm going to mention a podcast that I love that's called I Love That Movie, and it's a podcast. And what I love about this podcast is, and it's run by a friend of mine, so, you know, full disclosure, but it's a great podcast because I really like the way that she talks with her guests about movies and takes usually a more feminist, sex positive, body positive, you know, more, it's more body positive look at a lot of films in a way that is not necessarily critical of the films. Like every episode of the podcast is the host is talking with a guest who's talking about a movie that they love. And so it's not like a downer when you hear about, you know, podcasts where you're just like critiquing, you know, everything that was wrong with the film, but they still talk about things, you know, within films that they loved that they wish were different or, you know, hey, let's think about this from a different perspective. And I really like that because it's a more positive way of, you know, being able to enjoy films that may have had some problematic aspects and thinking
permission
about
to play with it.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's a lot of fun and they go over, you know, sometimes some topics that are relevant to us, especially when I was thinking about like body positivity, sex positivity, just media that we could all be consuming and being, you know, happier rather than making us all frustrated and pulling our hair out. So highly yeah, recommend that one.
I imagine
that was
movies.
The I Love That Movie podcast.
Yes.
Beautiful.
I imagine too that it would be kind of validating to hear a movie that you were like, I liked it, but, and then hear somebody else kind of have go through that critique as well. But like, you know, positive and negative. I think that,
yeah.
That's my favorite part about that, like really good reviews like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And you can actually talk about it and say, yes, I loved this movie. It's my favorite movie. And yes, it's from the 80s and it's got some problems and let's tear those mm-hmm. apart while we're here. And
is that
it's
foreshadowing?
Okay. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, no, I hear that. When I initially had in my notes that I wanted to talk about the movie The Whale as what was turning me on this week, and then I actually saw it and did not feel that way. So I would love to hear, you know, some insightful critiques because there were some beautiful pieces to that movie that I just can't in good standing defend. So that's a conversation I'm hoping that we can maybe have on this show a little bit later. But for now, I am really excited to tell people about the movie Women Talking. I don't know how wide of a release this is. I think it could be really easy in the avatar of it all to like miss out on this. And I really want to encourage people to check out this like very strange. I don't know if it's a folk tale. I don't know if it should be taken as literary fiction. I don't know how you're meant to interpret this movie, but it involves a number of fundamentalist religious women sitting together and having conversations about whether or not they are, quote, willing to take it anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's all framed around a very like small isolationist community. And so it's removed enough from our daily lives that I don't think it'll be necessarily triggering for most viewers. But I absolutely know that the conversations that they're having around sexual assault, around sort of patriarchal leadership are absolutely things that are going to resonate with the people who are watching this show tonight. I hope nobody misses it. I think it was a great conversation we're checking out.
Ooh, I'm excited. I'm glad to hear you watched that because I was wondering about it. I've been seeing the ads and thinking this looks like it has the potential to be really, really good and kind of a powerful commentary. So I'm definitely going to rush out and see it.
It hit for me. I dug it. I know that there are plenty of people that are like, do I really need to see like 8 women just sitting on hay bales talking?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes.
No action. Yes. Yeah. Sometimes yeah. That's exactly what you're looking for.
Yeah.
It's you don't even know that you need it.
And I feel like that in and of itself is also a statement that the film is probably making. Like, yes, maybe you should sit down and be interested in hearing women talking.
Yeah, fair to say.
Yeah, I'm all for it.
Well, let's get into our predictions. I don't want to overstate it, but I do think that it's worth mentioning that this is a idea that we kind of came to late and sort of threw together a little bit. And I honestly think that that's for the best, because if we overthought some of these predictions, I think we would all be too gun shy to actually make them. So I'm going to go ahead and be on the record now. I will not force anybody to be held accountable when 2024 rolls around. There is a possibility that some of these clips might come back up, but I'm not going to hold anybody's feet to the fire. I do want to hear y'all's sort of brave, half-baked, not necessarily worth taking too seriously ideas, because I do think that there is cause for hope this year. I do think that there are things to be excited about. I mean, I don't know if I'm the only one who remembers this, but I feel like back in 2016, kind of after the election, there was this kind of ongoing meme at the end of the year where everybody was just like, fuck 2016. I have nothing positive to say about it. Like, let's get through it. 2017 will be better. Like, at the end of the year, John Oliver had a giant 2016 that he just blew up, and we were collectively like, oh, 16. That was awful.
Yeah.
What poor, sweet summer children we all were back then, thinking that 2016 was the worst year we could imagine. So with that notion in mind, I mean, what is y'all's vibe going into 2023? Like, how are you feeling right now in January?
Yeah, I remember that episode of John Oliver in 2016 and you know, thinking exactly the same way. And then I made the same mistake in 2020. I bought my little, you know, 2020 dumpster fire candle holder.
Right. Yeah.
You know, to celebrate the end of the year. That was terrible. 2021 is it. We're through it. And then, you know, 6 days later, you know,
yeah. it only took 6 days into 2020.
Yeah. So after that, I've kind of, you know, set aside this idea of, you know, hoping that the brand new year will be completely different than the previous 12 months right. have been. But I think at the same time, I'm taking it as an opportunity to do the same thing that we do every day, which is keep moving forward and keep trying to do a better job of what we've been trying to do. And hey, now we have 365 more days of experience, and maybe it's experience of knowing what not to do, but hey, that's experience too. And so we can do better. And it's just another chance to keep going and keep trying. I think we are gonna make some progress, and good things are gonna happen, like you said, but maybe we don't have to have unrealistic expectations about an immediate and sudden change.
Yeah, nobody claim this is your year. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the meme, that's sort of the general temperature, I think, going around. But what about you, Erin? How are you feeling about the state of the world?
Yeah, so agree. I can't set my hope so high on anything really right now. I think that over the last few years, it's taught me to maybe just sit back a little bit and like kind of wait it out and see how things are going to turn before I make too many plans. But at the same time, realizing the things that are kind of more within my control. So like, I have no idea what's going to happen in the world, but I can kind of troll like what kind of things hobbies I'm getting into and that sort of thing. And also like what I'm paying attention to. Cause I know that definitely in 2016, and I'm saying this as a Canadian, I also felt like something like slammed down, you know, like something changed in everybody's mood for like quite a few years. And yeah, just as we were pulling out of it, then 2020 happened. But I think I am seeing, like, we'll talk about it on this episode. I'm seeing lots of change, good and bad, some neutral, some is to be determined still. So I think that this is like maybe like a time of a lot of shifting. And so I'm going to be optimistic, what do you call it? Cautiously optimistic. and not, yeah, we're not making prophecies here. We're just kind of talking about the things that we are maybe hoping to see in the new year, and some stuff that is maybe concerning that we should focus on a little bit too.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. So I mean, to that end, what is something that you are keeping a very close eye on and feeling very concerned about? Something that seems like it may be trending downwards as we go into the year.
Okay. So I could probably spend a whole episode just on this one topic. It's a big one, but it is the rise of incels and rise of like the MGTOW men go their own way, and seeing where that's kind of almost coming to like a bit of a head now. but where there's a real lack of maybe people's own personal commitment to like understand what's going on, I guess that's what I'm getting at. So we've all seen what's gone on in this last year with like Jordan Peterson and like Andrew Tate and these sort of things. But then also on the kind of more darker end, like what's gone on in like these like communities, these forums online, I have people in my life who've been affected by, you know, this kind of ideology where there's this, you know, there's this loneliness and isolation, and then there's finger pointing at like who's to blame for all of it. So I have taken it on myself lately to try to educate myself more. And right now I'm only about halfway into the book, so I can't tell you what the answers are yet. And actually, I think the author even says that they don't have all the answers, but I'm reading a book right now called The Tough Standard. It's by Dr. Ronald F. Levant and Shauna Pryor. And this book basically goes into the kind of current masculinity and where we've kind of gone wrong with it, and how some of our assumptions about like raising children who are socialized as masculine, how we've kind of taken a misstep here. And there's so many different things that this book covers. And it basically is the intersection of different like masculinity and other identities, like, you know, your sexual orientation and your socioeconomic state, ethnicity, all those sort of things. It's absolutely fascinating book. And so I'm about halfway through it right now. And I think that there'll be a lot of information that can be gleaned from it as far as educating myself or, you know, other people about what's actually going on in this movement with with young men specifically. And I think the overarching kind of thing that I'm taking away from it is that we need to have more, we need to step back and have a little bit more empathy going into it. And as infuriating as it can be, because they're pointing the fingers at a lot of, you know, marginalized communities already, it's really hard to not kind of bite back when you see this stuff going on. But if we want to see change happen in that, maybe there's some different approaches, even if it just starts with your own self-education. So that's something that's really on my mind a lot right now. And like I said, it's affected my own life. I have people in my own life that I think have fallen down that pipeline. So
yeah, I mean, with COVID and so many other forces at work, I feel like there is something of a scarcity mindset that is really sort of taken over the culture. And as soon as things start to feel scarce, people start to get more defensive. They are much more quickly to other, and everybody who is already in the margins is just forced that much further out. So I hear that that concern very strongly echoed in. I mean, we don't have to talk about Congress, but like, there's a lot of there. It's kind of everywhere.
Right. I think one of the, if I can point to two more things about the book that I've read so far that I'm really loving is, I have a son. I have a son who's 6 right now. And a good chunk of this first couple chapters is talking about like, how did we get here? How did we get to this point where we're just finding masculinity in this way that is kind of out of touch with what, when they're polling people, how people actually feel about like their masculine identities. And one of the things I was really, I guess, touched by was like the young boys, you know, born male children are actually, they start off very, very expressive and very emotionally attuned to their like caregivers and their families. And then somewhere around the age of 4 to 6, something starts to happen. And he actually calls it a dehumanization process of where we start to shut down their emotions. And then we see these, you know, these people who grow up to have really out of touch with their own feelings. And so he talks about it as a normative masculine alexithymia, which is like the psychological term for just inability to really identify your own feelings. Yeah. So there's a connection there that he's making, he's building up to it about maybe we need to teach people how to identify their feelings and how to get back in touch with that in a way that they don't feel so much shame over. And so seeing it from that aspect helps me grow in my empathy for people who are in that moment.
I love that. I think that is such an important topic that you brought up too. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, toxic masculinity and incel internet culture and things like that on here before. And I think you're exactly right. Like the problem isn't going to go away if we just, you know, continue to be mad that, you know, there's this, you know, incel and MGTOW and all this going on. It's happening for a reason. And I think it's so important what you said to separate these pieces of what we're calling masculinity, which are problematic, from how men are. You know, those are not the same thing. And, you know, it's very easy in, you know, general conversation, or if you're not really thinking very, very clearly about the words that you're using and the way you're using it, it can sound like you're saying men are bad. And that's not it. You know, sure. I've talked to people before who were saying, you know, I was so mad at this idea of toxic masculinity and feminism for so many years because I thought it meant that as a man, I was the bad guy. And, you know, I don't want to be the bad guy. And that's not what it means. So I love that you mentioned this book that really breaks down, like, what are the elements of this that are the problem? I just added that while you were talking to my Goodreads list. So
yeah, I think a few people in the chat did that. And I don't want to belabor the point before we move on to Kara's answer, but I do want to point out something somebody in the chat said about how incels shouldn't be shunned. They should be pitied. And I would even, you know, I don't want to be ticky-tacky about the language, but I would even take that word pitied and I would replace it with understood. Like they need compassion, because I think pity is that experience of I care about your situation and I have concern about your situation, but I'm also looking down on you. You know, I, who have everything, look down on you poor people with pity for what you don't have. When instead, I think we can recognize that, like, for lack of a better phrase, you know, there but the grace of God go I. I mean, I could have very easily been sucked into that sort of Andrew Tatey manosphere-y type direction. And I feel grateful that I haven't been, but a lot of people are. And I think that we need to see this as not a problem of character so much as like a larger cultural issue that needs to be addressed. Hopefully the show is some small part of all that.
Yeah, exactly.
Great book recommendation.
I could talk about it forever. I could keep going.
Well, so Kara, what is something you are really keeping your eye on with a bit of concern this year?
And it's kind of, for me, maybe another sort of facet of this same issue that Aaron brought up. You know, something that I've been worried about and I'm keeping an eye on is just the continued politicization of people's bodies and their personal sexual health decisions. And instead of treating those as personal decisions and the attributes and characteristics of people, this sort of trend towards making it a popular, trendy, you know, political item to pass ridiculous bills about, you know, who can go to the bathroom and not. And then, you know, to it's not just, you know, ridiculous legislation that's happening. It's things that are really passing through, whether it's at local or state or national level in the U.S. And certainly in other countries around the world, where, you know, I don't want to keep talking about it every single time we're on the show, but, you know, in the United States now, you know, women have less access to reproductive health care than they used to. And I think this is something that is, you know, continuing to be made into a political debate, which is not the forum that these things need to be discussed in. And so that concerns me, because when it's political, it becomes very easily polarized. And then it becomes this game where there's going to be winners and losers, rather than something where we can actually talk to people. And like you mentioned before, have compassion and have empathy and understand one another and come to a solution that makes sense and is respectful of people and their bodies and their health. And I think that the more we can get that out of the political realm, the better. But you know, that's been going on a lot lately, so that is probably my number one concern.
I hear that. I mean, I think we're all circling a lot of the same concerns, but I am particularly nervous about this usage of the term groomer anytime we talk about somebody who wants to talk to children, who want to talk to anybody about bodily autonomy, about gender, and some of these bigger issues. Jesse Gender, an old friend of the show, did a particularly excellent video on this that I'll make sure to have alongside, you know, Aaron's book recommendations and some of the other things that we're talking about tonight in the show notes for this episode, because it really lays out the way there is escalating violence. I mean, we can talk about Club Q and a number of other issues. We're seeing all of this conversation around drag and how this is somehow grooming children, don't say gay, and some of these other topics that just the notion of being a gay person is somehow sexualized. Just the idea of being a trans person makes you a sexual object in the popular culture mentality oftentimes. And we're increasingly seeing anybody who is outside of that, like, cishet prescribed notion to be labeled as not just weird or deviant, but vampiric, and trying to like go after the children, which of course is rhetoric that we can see in every violent assault on every minority in nearly every genocide that we can really track. It's very, very concerning to me, this idea that myself as a therapist who occasionally works with teenagers and helps them to understand themselves, at a time in their lives where teenagers are supposed to be trying to learn to understand themselves, and how that would somehow make me some sort of monster. And, you know, I do this show with y'all. Like, I've read the comment section. Like, I'm used to being labeled as a monster. But to have every single person who just exists with some of these identities lumped into that notion is a growing trend that I think could be the biggest issue of 2023.
Yeah, completely agree.
It's definitely scary. And I don't think you're, I think you're not putting it mildly, that like this escalation of like the language around this. I think if anybody's done their own deep dive into, you know, history, we see how these things are kind of, you know, they start on the edge of that like language, and then they kind of move in and they becomes more and more aggressive. Like if we can look back to 5 years ago and we can think about what's being said on national television, like it probably would have shocked us, anybody, it would have shocked them maybe to hear it on national television, but they've kind of escalated up to this point. And so it's that kind of boiling a frog in water kind of thing. And I think it's something that people need to be aware of, so that they know when they're being, you know, when they have been under that like propaganda, to change, subtly change their mind one step at a way, and how dangerous that could be. Yeah. I have kids, like I said, myself, and I can't imagine if one of my own kids was in that, you know, coming up in that situation, and they had something to think that they would be attacked on such a personal and hurtful level, just for, like you said, trying to figure out who they are. Yeah. I'm very grateful for where I'm at, but I'm also not going to pretend that it can't happen here in Canada too, because the language is happening here too. So I'm not going to sit back and think that this is just an American thing that's happening. It's something that I'm watching very closely, because Canada is, you know, the little brother to
America. Saw those final episodes of Handmaid's Tale. I don't trust y'all for a minute.
No, it's easy to kind of sit pretty up here and think it's not happening, but it's the murmurs happen everywhere. So I think it's something that we need to push back on now, and you know, confront the people. If you hear that kind of language and stuff, like really actively take be participant in fighting back against where it's going. Mm-hmm. So
I mean, my whole life I have heard rhetoric around, well, if George Bush gets elected, I'm moving to Canada. It's always like the next one. But this is the first time in my life where I have lost friends, I have lost clients, I've lost acquaintances who are all moving away from Texas because of the specific rhetoric of folks like our sitting governor and our AG and the media around them. So it is
Not just a sentiment anymore. There are actually people, and I mean, I don't blame them. The things that are happening are terrifying. And if you identify in one of those areas that's under attack right now, like it's a life or death thing for a lot of people. It's not just a preference to
no doubt, no doubt.
The government's being run. So it's like, and that's not hyperbolic. Like people are running for their lives in a lot of these cases. So
I mean, it was my natural instinct to kind of razz my friend and be like, nah, you're not leaving. Like, I refuse to accept your resignation as a Texan. But then, you know, as they started to unpack, like, well, I have a trans daughter and she's 13 and we just don't want to be doing another 4 years of high school in this place. Like, that breaks my goddamn heart. Tough stuff ahead, but are there trends that y'all feel hopeful about? I mean, are there things that you feel like could be getting better?
Yes.
Do you want to go ahead, Kara? You want me to start off?
Okay. Yeah, no, either way.
We got to take the upswing, go back into like, okay, now what's good? What good is happening now? There are some good things.
Yeah. And you know, I do think, you know, even though we're identifying all of these, you know, very dangerous trends that have been happening that are having real impacts on people's lives, at the same time, we're not the only people who are having this conversation. And the fact that we're able to have these conversations and that other people are having these conversations means that it's not going uncontested. You know, this is something that we can continue to debate and discuss. And I think one example of this is, you know, even though, you know, I live in Texas too, well, most of the time, you know, even though we have, you know, some very disappointing things that happen over and over again with things like, you know, the curriculum that's taught in schools and everything like that, And like you mentioned, you know, Don't Say Gay and all that stuff that is going on that's very detrimental. At the same time, you know, people have access to other information, even if they're not learning it in school. You know, we have shows like this one, you know, the interwebs exist. And yes, there's a lot of, you know, bad information online as well. You need to have, you know, some literacy and critical thinking skills before you just go off into the Google and learn things. But, you know, people do have access to alternative information. You know, this isn't like even, you know, when we were kids or when I was a kid and young, you know, you couldn't just go online and learn something different than what your parents and grandparents were telling you or what you learned out of the textbook. And so there is access to information. And, you know, I am convinced that after years of this show and, you know, lots of other information out there, people in general are going to at some point this year, and maybe this is a little bit of my prediction for this year too, people are going to have a better understanding of sex and gender and the diversity of human experience on those spectrums, if you will. I am convinced that that message is going to get through. People are starting to get it, and we're going to be able to move forward from that. Like, we're making progress. People understand these terms a little better, and we're going to keep trying. And, you know, it's a little, it's inches, but I'll take it.
Yeah, I really hate to look to TikTok and to, you know, Netflix and the Disney Corporation as like our saviors in all of this. But there is reason to believe that there is wider access to this kind of content. You don't have to, you know, stay up late after your parents have gone to sleep in order to watch programming that has gender diversity and, you know, some meaningful conversation about all of this stuff. So hopefully let's see that trend in the towards the better. Aaron, what has you a little bit more at peace?
A little bit more at peace. So I had mentioned that I am Canadian. Obviously, I've said it every show, but we have seen our own rise in kind of extremism in Canada here. And specifically this last year, we've had a couple of different figures who've kind of come up in the Canadian conservative side of things. And to connect it to what I was saying earlier with like the incel and the MGTOW movements, it kind of came out that somebody was connected to that. And the public stance, the public approval has gone down. And I think I'm looking hopeful, or I'm feeling hopeful towards what's actually going on in the mind of the masses. And that a lot, you know, we hear a lot of these things happening all the time about, you know, through different media sources. But when they are doing like polls on people, I think that the minds of the average person sitting at home is changing because we see, you know, the approval ratings for people who identify with these, you know, really extreme views, the approval goes down for them. So I'm hopeful that that means that we are on the, you know, the bend towards that affecting legislation as well. But yeah, I'm going to be, like I said, cautiously optimistic that that is the slow sounds of change.
No, again, I think we are all largely in agreement here, because I know that we all just said all of the scary negative things that we just said, but whether this is a, you know, cheeky, ridiculous prediction that's going to age terribly or a very real possibility, I do think that acceptance of trans folks in a sort of like rank and file day-to-day sort of sense will be meaningfully changed by this time next year. I'm not predicting easiness by any means, but I do imagine that by some notable percentage, the day-to-day life and times of your typical trans person will be better by this time next year. Even as the political rhetoric gets bigger and bigger, I think that there is some sort of backlash to that already beginning to show itself. And I'm at least somewhat hopeful that the increase in information, the maybe the longevity of these ideas being available. I mean, I hate to use this as a watershed moment, but when did Caitlyn Jenner come out to the world? Like, when did Sophia Brissett show up as a character on Orange is the New Black? A lot of these things are fairly new, and I would like to believe that enough time is beginning to go by where these aren't just like crazy, what are they talking about kinds of issues, because more and more you have grandchildren that are identifying as trans. You have coworkers that are identifying as trans, and people, I think, hopefully, are getting just a little bit closer. Do y'all think that there is any reason to believe that as a possibility, or is that yes. completely out there?
No, I think there is. And I want to clarify for anybody who's watching this and maybe misunderstanding, Christy, I don't think you're saying that all of a sudden the number of trans people has suddenly increased.
Fair to say, yeah.
The climate is such that people feel more able to let people know. And I know that's what you meant, but just to clarify, because I know some people can be kind of alarmist about where'd all these trans people come from all of a sudden, you know, no, they've been here. Yeah. It's just now, you know, it appears that in a lot of ways, like you said, you know, people are in many cases able to feel safe enough to come out and let people know. It doesn't mean, like you said, that it's that way for everybody and in every case, but mm-hmm. I completely agree. I think, you know, it's hard to deny that that's the case. You know, part of the reason that, you know, so many people are freaking out about it in some ways lately is because it's become more visible and more accepted. And I think that's a good thing, not the freaking out part, but the more visible and more accepted part.
Sure. And it's been kind of a common talking point over the last 2 or 3 years that, like, I think a lot of trans folks miss being invisible or less visible, or certainly not 90 fucking percent of Tucker Carlson's talking point. Like, Jesus. But that visibility does bring with it, I think, an added level of safety. And I would like to think that that is trending in a good direction. So maybe I'm crazy. Maybe this clip will age terribly. Really, I'd love to hear people's thoughts. I'd love to hear everybody's predictions. And Aaron, I'm going to let you take us to the phones here in just a moment. But before you do, I want to take a quick opportunity to see what's been going on around the rest of the eight.
What has your experience been? What tips can you give? What does it look like for somebody who's maybe just getting started?
And I can always give more than just the tip.
Right. Yes. Thank you.
You know, I mean, we've always been taught about the great I am. And,
of course. Yeah, we've been crying.
Where the hell did this come from?
Drugs.
Yeah, drugs.
Drugs. You know, maybe it's my good looks. I don't know. They feel like they always need to tell me about Jesus. And
it's not your good look.
And it's not. No, it's definitely not. They're trying to keep themselves just praying.
You just have that face that you need to be saved, honey.
Even then, Ben, atheists on Twitter will argue all day do we lack a belief? Do we claim that a God isn't real? You know, like, there's even semantics there as to what actually an atheist even is.
I didn't get to meet myself until I was in my 20s. And I hope that today's kids get options before that to really meet themselves while they're young. So you can have your closed-minded ideas, but I don't think that it's improving anything. And the data shows that.
All right, so we're going to jump into some phone calls here if you all are ready. Mm-hmm. And just a reminder for anybody watching, we do have some lines open still. So if anything we've said so far has, you know, got your brain thinking,
tell us where we're wrong, please.
Yeah, exactly. Or give us your harebrained predictions or prophecies for the future. Mm-hmm. And we won't hold you to it either. So the number is 512-991-9242. Or you can go through your computer at tiny.cc/callsex. So let's get into some calls here. Let's talk to Robin. Robin is calling in from Washington, and they want to know how to deal with internalized shame for associating being submissive with femininity. Mm-hmm. Hi, Robin.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay. So,
how are you doing?
What do you want me to explain first?
I just read off your call, like the cue you had in there. So you want to know how to deal with internalized shame for associating being submissive with femininity. And so do you want to break that down for us a little bit and tell us what you mean by that?
So I'm a trans woman. Yeah. Sorry. I'm a little tripped up by the delay.
Oh yeah. It's okay. We just keep going. There is a bit of a delay and we'll just do our best here.
Okay. So I'm a trans woman. I came out a little less than a year ago. And, you know, that comes with a lot of new revelations about who you are and what you're into. And a lot of those things being about my sexuality. And I'm a submissive, like extremely so. Like, I'm having more fun with sex than I even thought was possible. But I'm also a very anxious person, and I have a lot of internalized shit that I project onto myself. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've been struggling with is worrying that the only reason I think I'm submissive is because I associate it with femininity, and that by doing so, I'm reinforcing stereotypes about women.
Yeah.
And basically, as people whose opinion I respect. I kind of just wanted to hear you explain why that's wrong.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, you have permission to be as feminine and or as submissive as you want to be. The way that you play, the sex that you're having, I don't know that that's something that you need to answer before Judith Butler and or God for. Like, you are welcome to be whoever you need to be in that sort of playful situation, because that's what sex is. Right. Like the whole dom sub master sub dynamic. That's just play.
Yeah. It's purely in the bedroom.
Yeah. And that's all sex is mammalian play. I mean, like little tiny baby tiger kittens ferociously attack each other in their own mind because they're terrified of having to go out into the world and hunt for themselves. If I can anthropomorphize these big cats a little bit, like we ourselves, mm-hmm. we take the things that we're afraid of. We might think that like we're excited to go to war and that's why we want to be space marines, but really we're kind of terrified of death, and that's why we make art like John Wick movies where we can sort of laugh in the face of death. Like the things that we are afraid of are very much the things that we play around with and very often the things that we eroticize. And so it makes sense to me that if you are at a moment in your life where you are coming to terms with your gender and beginning to access your femininity, that powerful, beautiful, powerful thing could also be really fucking scary, and that you would want to eroticize that and play with that a little bit, because playing with something in a like non-dangerous, outside of the real world kind of way, that's how we gain a sense of mastery over it. That's how we get comfortable with it, is when we do it naked and sillily and in our bedrooms alone or with the people that we can be intimate and trusting with. That's our opportunity to goof around before we are obligated to take those things seriously and to be more responsible about the way we see gender. How does that land with any of y'all?
Yeah, I love that. Christy, I think you answered it the best. You're the expert here. But I'll throw in a book recommendation because I feel like that's what I'm here for. I read this book in grad school called Techniques of Pleasure by Margot Weiss, and it's an ethnographic study of a BDSM community in, I think, San Francisco. And they sort of interrogate this issue in one of the chapters, and she kind of goes into this explanation of how, you know, feminist theorists have argued over this very topic. I love that you mentioned Judith Butler.
I can imagine,
Christy. Yeah, and there's kind of this this sort of split where you have some of the older guard feminists that will, you know, take this sort of tone that, oh yeah, that's, it's, you know, denigrating towards women if you're being submissive in the bedroom, and, you know, we need to, you know, have a project of, you know, separating femininity from submissiveness, and, you know, that's all fine and well. But then you have the other side of the argument, which is, what's wrong with enjoying sex the way you like it? If mm-hmm. you're doing something that is fun for you, how is it, you know, empowering women to say you're not allowed to do that thing that you enjoy? You should just not enjoy sex instead, as a political statement.
Yeah, know? As a political statement.
Right. Like, if you want to do that, fine, I guess. But I don't think you need to.
I would like to stay there.
Yeah.
It's more complicated for me being trans, because mm-hmm. there's that little anxiety that I'm manufacturing the things that I see as feminine. Like,
mm-hmm. But isn't that what we all do?
They want to be.
Yeah. So I was thinking something kind of similar. I like that you both have such a good like educational background to like add to it. I will add my non-trained comments to it. What I think mm-hmm. I'm noticing about this whole kind of topic is like it is really good to like kind of dig into the weeds of like the kind of intellectualize like what's going on here, and when did this movement start, and when did we start trying to take these two things and separate them. But I think I keep going back to like the original wording that you had in your call, is that you have the sense of shame, and like maybe like really connecting with like, what does that feeling, what does that feel like to you? And even if we step back from like what the actual, you know, this disconnection or this connection that between submissiveness and femininity, and kind of deal with some of that shame that you're having, because ultimately, like, what is that shame doing? Like, what is it saying for you? Like, is it a feeling of not good enough, or that you're not doing it right, or something like that? I'm just connecting to that part of it, that like the sense of shame is brutal. It's very hard to deal with. And I think overcoming shame, depending on how you break it down into topic of it, and define it, the shame is an actual real powerful emotion that we have to kind of process and deal with. Yeah, I can feel the weight of that one, right? Like, shame's is a hard one, especially when it is internalized, and it's you kind of have to look a little deeper down of like why it's happening, and it feels so ingrained, right?
Yeah, because like I know on a rational level that it's not right, that, you know, right. Sexual predilections, is that the word? They're fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with them for anyone, but I have to make an exception for myself because ingrained.
It's so much harder to give ourselves the compassion and the permission and the forgiveness that we routinely extend to others. You know, it makes sense that we are eroticizing the things that we feel ashamed of so that we can stop feeling ashamed of them. But I can't do that because I might be closing the door for somebody else. And I would just ask you to consider this distress. Like, who is being harmed by your sexual practices? If you can point towards somebody whose life is being made worse, that doesn't necessarily mean you owe it to them to stop, but it's at least we can start asking that question. We can develop our moral philosophy around these things. But if you cannot demonstrate to me harm, then I don't think that you need to give it a second thought beyond possibly considering like, oh, maybe that's part of the appeal for me on a certain level. The fact that I feel so ashamed here, maybe this is a way of working through that and working that out. Now, if you feel like these things are escalating or starting to get turned around and you feel all twisted up in it, maybe it is okay to take a step back. Maybe it is a good idea to start to process these things verbally with somebody else, bringing in a professional or investigating the literature. Like, it's okay to pause if you're starting to feel pain, but I don't think that you need to force yourself to feel that pain. I don't think that you need to punish yourself for enjoying something. If you are in fact enjoying it, just give yourself permission to enjoy it.
Yeah, I really appreciate that perspective. I will say it wasn't really that bad for me. It's just kind of something that I would dwell on occasionally and just feel like kind of, eh. But I'm getting over that slowly, partially because I've started noticing that when I'm having a lot of fun in the bedroom, that the anxiety just completely goes away. Mm-hmm. So it's only afterwards, once I start rationalizing.
Yeah,
that's such a common thing too, right? Like, outside of even like the specific topic, that like, I think that is so common for us, especially if you were raised with some sort of belief. Shame is like just this common thing that we deal with. So I think there's a lot of things that we can all kind of relate to that with. So
yeah, man, I don't want to miss it. I think that's actually called the Ziegler effect. I remember I was reading about this just very recently. I want to get the proper terminology on it. But yeah, we do often push through our sense of disgust when we are turned on. And that eroticism is part of what empowers us to maybe tiptoe ever so closer to these things that we are struggling to accept, these things that we are resisting about ourselves. That erotic energy can be a power or a force to get us to actually like look at, pay attention, be mindful about the things that we would otherwise be avoiding in our lives. So, you know, no obligation to power through if you're feeling uncomfortable, but it's good.
And sometimes just knowing that that's a normal effect, that like after you've kind of finished whatever it is that was feeling really good at that moment, afterwards, knowing that that's a very normal effect can also help you kind of sit through it a little bit longer, or like sit with it and be like, oh, here comes the post nut clarity, or whatever people will call it. And this will only last a little bit. I'm just going to get myself a glass of water and it'll pass. And then I'll probably do this again sometime. And that self-compassion thing coming up again too, that, oh, this is just normal. It's normal to have this, especially with different backgrounds and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
And I'll just say very nerdily and very briefly, I was incorrect about the Ziegler effect. The Ziegler effect is when you don't nut and don't get to have that post-nut clarity. Right. I'm very much bastardizing this much more complicated scientific idea, but I want to clarify that for the audience.
It's not that. Yeah, you clarify that it's not called that.
Right.
I hope that definition ends up in a textbook at some point, yeah. Christy.
At least Urban Dictionary.
Yes.
That's good. Well, Robin, it was really nice talking to you. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up before we let you go?
Oh, yeah, no, that was it. Thank you very much. Okay.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you so much for calling in, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon. Yeah, so I think that's a very common, I mean, not common necessarily in, you know, the specific things that Robin is going through, but having shame and other things.
There's some universalness to that, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. And it always, I think it always feels like to us that, you know, like you said, Christy, well, it's different in my case, you know, I could advise a friend that it's fine, but, you know, for me, it's different because of this, that, and the other right. reason, and, you know, it's not okay in this case, and, you know, we all do that to ourselves, or a lot of us do that to ourselves. Right, I can identify with that.
Yeah. Well, Aaron, who else do you have on the lines?
I have another call on the line here. So let's talk to Stephen, is calling from Arizona. Mm-hmm. Stephen has written in here that younger people are feeling more comfortable coming out, which is great. But on a macro level, they worry that it's still not safe.
Fair to say.
Hi, Stephen.
Hi there. How are you?
Hey, doing well. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah.
Can you tell a little more about what you wrote in the queue here?
Sure. So I am glad that we create all of these safe spaces for increasingly younger people to feel comfortable to come out anywhere LGBT. But I feel like we have a lot of bubbles and a lot of foam, I guess, to extend the metaphor, but we're kind of still on the ocean. So there's this feeling to me that I called in before and spoken with Christy. I deal with teenagers and young people in my own life whose parents send them to me when they come out because they don't know how to talk to these kids. And they think because I'm on the spectrum, I will know everything about everything. So we have these conversations and that's fantastic. And I'm happy to do that. But there is, I watch Gay USA, for example, and there every week there are more trans people being killed in different parts of the country. We had what just happened in Colorado. We had what happened at the Pulse nightclub a few years ago. And I'm not saying we need to live in fear, but I'm old. And when I was first coming out or first dealing with the diversity of my own sexuality, I sort of curated my life and my friends to know where the safe spaces were and where the safe spaces weren't. And I kind of, I'll admit I kind of forget about it. I went to Home Depot, which one would think would be gay friendly. And I was wearing a pride shirt. I went there to buy a refrigerator and I got gay bashed in line. Hmm. And I was in my 40s and I was like, what the, did I just hear somebody called me the F word? Somebody called me a queen? What really? Because it had been so long and I didn't give it any thought. I was wearing an LGBT pride shirt. I didn't think anything about it. And something similar happened very recently. I went to a convenience store and I went in, in my regalia. I mean, I'm not bananas, but, just a pride shirt of some kind. And there was a guy with a gun inside the convenience store. Now, I live in Arizona. You're allowed to do that. But he had a very alt-right kind of shirt on. I don't even remember what it said. And I came home and told my boyfriend about it at the time. And he was like, Stephen, you didn't say anything, did you? There are times not to get on the soapbox. There are times not to just, buy your milk and get out. Don't confront, because that's kind of where I'm at this point in my life. And I can do that. I'm not relying on my parents. I'm not relying on a given community because I have my own support network and I've developed that. But I don't feel like younger people necessarily appreciate that. And that's what worries me, because there are still young people, they're still being bullied, they're still facing a lot of adversity. And I just wondered what you all thought about it. I caught the end, I joined you late, sorry, Christy, and caught the end of what you were talking about going into the coming year, about things getting better. And I do agree on a lot of it, but I know it's a pendulum as well. So I just wondered what you thought about that, and I'll stop talking now. Go ahead.
So are you kind of saying that as we get more acceptance and more, and we do create these kind of safe environments, that especially younger kids not having a lot of experience with the greater world, that they're going to, you know, even if they have a very accepting family or accepting school community, that they are going to step out into a different community and not be trying to hide who they are. And then they're going to walk into something kind of unsafe that they're unaware of.
Absolutely.
I kind of think that's what it kind of sounds And that seems like a very valid fear to have. I don't know what the answer is for that. Then kind of what we were bringing up earlier about, you know, continuing to pressure people around us in a good way to educate themselves so that we can expand that safety larger. And obviously there is some intersection with what we were talking about earlier with like this kind of alt-right and incel movement and and this toxic masculinity or like, you know, this inappropriation of masculine labels and the how normal it is for them to be bigoted and cause harm to individuals. So I think it kind of goes back to that initial conversation that we were having on how do we fix this? I'm going to throw out there, it starts with education and it starts with talking to the people you know personally so we can expand those places. But I agree with you. I'm afraid too. I'm afraid for people who have been may have a safe environment. I'm afraid for them too when they step out and they're not actually as safe as they have been made to feel at home.
Yeah, I myself see this less as a queer issue, as a bullying issue.
Yeah.
You know, and bullying is a human behavior that, you know, will always be sort of baked into our DNA on a certain level. But I do think that there's reason to believe that for at least for younger children, or maybe not younger children, but for adolescents, that there is a much broader notion of diversity available. There's a lot more information. I think that you are probably less likely to be bullied at 14 for being gay than you were when I was in high school. What
it is
maybe,
so different.
Yeah, it's different in a million different ways. Yeah. And I don't want to apples and oranges it, because while I do think that bullying, you are less likely to be bullied, for instance, for being gay at 14 than maybe 30 years ago, I do worry about the nature of that bullying. I do feel like it may not be the like messy kind of violent hazing that we maybe imagine, and that there's a very real possibility that it is increasing in like meaningful violence and in meaningful harm. Where that goes or what to do about it is, I think, anybody's guess at this stage. Does that all seem fair?
Yes. I think to your point, going back decades, growing up this way, you develop a thicker skin and are more prepared for certain situations. But it is the level of violence. You know, like I said, the guy had a gun. Now, I didn't confront him. I just got my milk and got out of there. But, you know, I was just waiting for him to say something, and I would have come right back at him without thinking about it. And that's what scares me with, you know, even with one of the kids that I deal with is non-binary. They had a very accepting family. They went off to college and immediately ran into problems with roommates and ended up being driven out of their apartment. And you're absolutely right. It's education, but I wonder if it's a regional thing. You were talking about Texas. I know people moving out of Florida for very similar reasons, you know, and I'm leaving Arizona, not because of that, just because I'm tired of being hot. But it's one of those things where, you know, like my sister, I like to tell stories, Christy knows. My sister lives in Tennessee and she wanted me to move near her. And I'm like, I'm a Democrat, an atheist, and I'm LGBT. How many bullseyes do you want on me? You know, mm-hmm. So I feel like it's a regional thing. And so we can, I agree about education, but I feel like there are limits depending on what communities we're dealing with. And that's what's very upsetting. Because, you know, in the case of my non-binary friend, they moved into a place out of an accepting place. They moved to a different region and suddenly all bets were off and they really weren't prepared for it. And that's unfortunate. Thank you for taking my call. I know there's not really a solution here other than education, but
I was going to say, I would like to hear Kara, if you have any input into that, any thoughts on this?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I certainly don't have all the answers to this problem either, but you know, I am also troubled by what Stephen is talking about here, you know, kind of like we mentioned a little bit earlier that, you know, as, you know, there comes to be more acceptance and more visibility of queer people, especially younger people, we do at the same time as that see in some cases a more kind of vehement backlash to it from other segments of society. And that is an unfortunate reality. I think y'all hit the nail on the head with education. And also, you know, there's a real role here for allies to step in and actually use their privilege and their position, you know, as someone who may not be a part of the LGBTQ plus community, but who, you know, values human beings as human beings, to take the opportunity to step in. And I don't necessarily mean, you know, jump in front of bullets if it's a violent situation or something like that, but, you know, do what, you know, you need to do. But, you know, just in terms of being prepared to verbally defend someone and support someone, you know, if you see this happening or someone being made to feel uncomfortable or diminished in some way, you know, a lot of times, you know, people ask, you know, oh, I wonder what I can do. How can I, you know, be an ally? What does that mean? Well, it means step in and do something, you know, if you see somebody, you know, being
harmed. make sure that in some way that you show that you're a safe person. So somebody is I wear a pin or whatever. So like people know that they can come talk to me. Like that's so simple. It's such a basic, simple thing. Yeah. And both my kids do the same thing. They choose to wear a pin on their backpack just so that they know that it's okay. They're, you know, they are a friend. If you don't have a friend on the playground, you can come play with them. Stuff like that. Like it's just simple little things that you can do.
And there's a lot of nuance, you know, to it. You know, obviously you don't want to overstep and, you know, make a situation worse or, you know, cause someone to feel, you know, patronized or anything like that. But yeah, to your point, I feel like this is where the rest of society, you know, needs to help this problem. This can't be something where we just all, you know, sit back and watch and go, oh yeah, well, look, another act of violence. Gosh, I wish we could do something about that, you know. Well, oh yeah, I saw
some prayers, not some prayers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, there's a role for everyone here. So I think it's something we can all, you know, try and contribute to the solution a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So Stephen, it sounds like we all agree with you in a lot of ways. So
we're all scared with you.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all scared. We all hope that we can kind of move forward and make some positive changes because I think it's a very, very valid concern.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm gonna let you go here, Stephen, but we thank you for calling in and chatting with us again and your stories are welcome.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Oh. Thank you, too.
Sorry, Stephen.
Yeah.
That delay is killer tonight.
So now is when I'm asking y'all to really go out on a limb because we haven't actually like seen any of these things, but I'm looking for some pop culture predictions. I mean, what's on your radar for 2023? What are you watching for in the pop culture sphere?
Kara, would you like to go first?
Sure. Okay. I mean, I'm going to talk about books. I'm super excited about some books that are coming out.
I mean, you're itching to talk about books.
Yeah. What else would I talk about? I'll tell you one example. You know, I am really enjoying lately reading a lot more fiction, particularly speculative fiction. Ooh, let me say that again. Speculative fiction, sci-fi. I had a really interesting conversation at a book club earlier today about a whole bunch of new genres of books that I didn't even realize existed. There's something called new weird fiction and bizarre fiction and the list goes on. And I am loving it. And I am loving all of the ways that authors and whole different, you know, styles of literature are, you know, tackling some of the issues that we've been talking about in more concrete ways. I love one of the things that I love about, you know, science fiction, and these other forms of fiction is that people can talk about these issues in a slightly different context that all of a sudden can make it all make sense or shift your perspective on it in a way that you didn't think about it that way before. And I think that's a great way to have conversations around the diverse diversity of gender and sexuality and just, you know, the diversity of human beings. And so one book that I'm super excited about reading in the upcoming year is a new fantasy novel by Martha Wells, who is the author of The Murderbot Diaries. That's one of my favorite sci-fi series that has a part robot, part organic sort of agender protagonist. I love the way she incorporates this into her stories. And she's got a new fantasy novel coming out called Witch King in May. And I am super pumped for it. I'm ready to see what she does with this and the ways that she, you know, helps us think about how people are and in all their beautiful, wonderful ways and in wacky ways too. So
frankly, I am looking forward to exploring it one paragraph at a time whenever you have a mic check to do. It's been a good time.
I will be bringing that for our mic checks and reading from it. You'll eventually get to hear the whole thing if you let me come back enough times.
Well, let me jump in very quickly just to say that my prediction, my hope for 2023 is the Oscars ceremony this year. It comes up on March 12th. And I know, it's an old institution. It's a dead institution. It's a fucking white institution. It's a bunch of old grumpy men telling people what they should watch, and they're completely out of step. And you're right. You're right about all of it. But I've been watching the Oscars my whole life. I dig it. I love these films. And I think that this year could meaningfully be a moment where movies like Women Talking, where movies like Everything Everywhere All at Once, and some of these like very diverse, very interesting movies could potentially take center stage. So my hopeful prediction for 2023 is that we actually see a very sex positive, very diverse Oscar ceremony. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm hopeful.
Yeah, I am too. mine's a little bit maybe less serious, but I'm just looking forward to the new. I mean, we were kind of going back and forth earlier whether it was happening, yep. And it seems that there will be a new season of Sex Education on Netflix.
Yeah, so, I'm excited for that too.
Forward to that, yeah. I've watched the last one I think three times through because I love it. So the last couple seasons. So I'm
Asha Butterfield, Gillian Anderson. I mean, I'll go ahead and spoil for the audience. whenever we invite somebody to be on this show, I put together a document with a whole complement of what to expect and what's going on. And I always inform them about the what's turning us on this week's segment of the show. And then, you know, just recycle that document each time. And so Sex Education specifically has been name checked at the top of the document that we use to run this show for, I think, more than 2 years. If you haven't checked it out yet, you need to.
Yeah, it's an excellent show, and it gives like actual real good advice too. Like, it's entertaining. It is like so well done. And like,
they name checked Emily Nagoski a handful of times.
I mean,
it's good work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what about movies? What movies are you hoping, maybe thinking, could possibly be a step in the right direction, or maybe even a milestone in sex positivity this year?
Okay, Kara, do you want to go first again with this one?
Okay, I'll go first again. I don't know that I have a good answer to this one. I have a discussion question for the room on this one. I noticed the other day I was at the theater and I saw a trailer for a film that I didn't realize was coming out in 2023 that I didn't know was going to happen. And I want to get y'all's opinion on this. So Magic Mike, they're making another one.
Yeah, and bring it on.
I'm going to watch it. I mean, I'm definitely going to watch it. Is that sex positive? I don't think that I would classify it as a milestone, but you know, to what extent is
Middle America sex positive? Yeah. It's you know, your Aunt Karen sex positive. Yeah. Like, it's, you know, it's positive for her. I do think that we could see that move the needle a little bit. I mean, anytime we're talking about male strippers or really anything in that direction, you get this more like burlesque sort of like body, like, oh my girl, like they're naked. There's such a different tone than at a strip club that is very much about the male gaze and directed towards men, where it's all like tits and fucking blah, blah, blah. So, you know, that distinction is a problem. I'm not necessarily trying to like push women or like Chippendales clubs like in a particular direction. But I can't help but feel like this movie is at least an opportunity for some women to have a chance to be having conversations about the fact that girls get horny too.
Right. That's partly one of my thoughts on it, is that like growing up in like an evangelical fundamentalist home, like I was always taught like girls are not visual. And so one thing I will say is that
that word visual.
It brings to the surface that we like to look too, you know?
And so there's no neuroscience backing up that conclusion, by the way. Really want to hammer that home. Absolute total junk science bullshit. Yeah. We've covered it better on this show, but keep going.
Yeah. Ahead. So I think it's good because it at least brings that up, that like old girl, like women like to see it too. And yes, that might be the body type that some people are drawn to. I think that like, obviously it's kind of written like how a guy thinks a girl thinks. I would challenge some producer out there to make a movie that's like really caters to the female gaze, but in a very like sexy way like that. Right. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I know there are movies like that, but make one that's like a blockbuster too, you know?
Yes.
Let's start teaching the other side of like what, you know, we find appealing, which I'm not saying Magic Mike isn't appealing. I'm going to watch it.
But it's appealing in like a very superficial way. Yeah. I feel like in a very kind of like narrow.
Let's do a dad bod version of it or whatever, you know?
Right. Yeah. Let's actually like, expand what we're talking about.
Expand it.
You know, like you said, with the female gaze, like, can we just like have a film called The Female Gaze and have them attempt to actually illustrate anything that approximates a female gaze, and then someone actually produce it and, you know, not worry about the fact that it's probably not going to make a lot of money because it's going to be very different than what people are expecting from the film, because most films are, you know, from the perspective of the male gaze. I want to have that conversation around male strippers, and it would be a very different movie than Magic Mike, I think. But
I think Christy is shook. He's shook up right now, so his screen is frozen. So we'll keep going here.
By this, go with yours.
Where were we here? Sorry. the movie I am looking forward to, or like the thing that I want to discuss as well, is the upcoming Little Mermaid live action movie. So I was a huge Little Mermaid fan growing up. I actually like had the original stories as an adult. Like it was my thing. I definitely was into that growing up. But we saw the huge outcry last year when they announced the cast. I'm curious to see first if it will do justice to the original kind of Disney movie, but also where they're going to take it as far as narrative goes. Because if we take a step back and look at the 1989 version, like it's pretty awful. Like the woman gets silenced. She has to seduce him on physical, like your body image alone, body language alone. She gets married off at 16, and then she moves away from all her family. Like it's not a great movie, but I'm hoping that with the current kind of trend with Disney, like Christy said earlier, they're not our savior or anything, but maybe they'll make some subtle changes in the narrative or at least kind of start that discussion. I'm really curious to see what happens.
I am too. I'm super excited for that. And I mean, I think they're going to try to do it, and I'm excited to see how they do it. And I'm also kind of wondering, you know, how are they going to accomplish this? Because like all the ways that you said, you know, the earlier one was so problematic, like on top of that, you know, like in order for her to, you know, get the man in the end of the story, like she has to change, you know, the
everything.
Bottom half of her body like has to go away. Like, I mean, that's not really body positivity as I think of it. And it's integral to the plot, at least of, you know, the way they made the original one. So I'm very interested as well to see what direction they take that. And I'm here for it. I want to see it.
Yeah, we'll just have to wait for that and see how. And then we can have a discussion on here whether they did a good job or not after.
Yes, we need to do an episode of movies and the portrayals that we
definitely
find relevant. Like we were talking in the pre-show a little bit about kind of the same thing with Dune. It's a book that I really enjoyed, and I've really enjoyed the first half of the movie version of it. I'm interested to see where they go with it too, for some of the same reasons that you mentioned about The Little Mermaid, you know, just that it, you know, the original Dune book, it's a little bit dated. I would not say that it is, really in any way progressive in a lot of the ways that we just mentioned. And it's going to have to be adjusted a little bit to not be terrible for the movie in some ways. And I'm excited to see the way that they can maybe take it in a better direction while still, you know, staying true to some of the elements of the original that do appeal to people for reasons that are not atrocious.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, let's hope that they actually do rise to the occasion and put out something that is not gross and disgusting. I'm also taking a little bit of a swing by saying I am predicting and hoping that I don't regret these words that the Barbie movie actually turns out to like similarly be this sort of reconstructed, deconstructed, like actual feminist sex positive idea. I'm not convinced that it will be. I can't promise that it will be, but honestly, I'm like Greta Gerwig is at the helm, Frances Ha, Lady Bird, like this is somebody who I trust. Like her adaptation of Little Women, I think really showed that she has her finger on the pulse of some of those like classical need to be revisited notions. So, you know, maybe come July 21st, I will absolutely be eating my words because I can appreciate why a like giant, highly sexualized plastic version of Margot Robbie may not be the feminist opus of 2023, but I'm pulling for it.
Yeah, it might be awesome. Yeah. It might be awesome.
I feel like there's an opportunity for some really good satire and, you know, a little bit of sarcasm to come from that. I'm looking forward to what they do with that too. It could be very entertaining if they put the right spin on it.
Yeah, fair to say.
Hey, we do have some calls, a few more calls on the line. Do you both want to take another call before we continue on our prediction list?
For sure. Well, I think we're running a little bit short, so let's race through them, but I would love to talk to people.
Okay. Let's talk to Melody calling from Arkansas. Melody is a truck driver and a trans woman, and they have learned that, well, I'll let her tell you. They've learned a little bit more about people being in that job.
No doubt.
Hi, Melody.
Hey, Christy, especially to you. Followed you on Talk Heathen and Atheist Experience and all that, and I really appreciate everything you've done. I learned a lot from you and Forrest and all the others.
Glad to hear.
Aaron, awesome to meet you. Kara, awesome to meet you too. I'm a truck driver, and I've been driving 9 years. And I've been to 46 U.S. states and 3 Canadian provinces. And if there's one thing I've learned, people in general, people by themselves, people one-on-one are awesome human beings. They are forgiving. They have no problem with you. They get along with you. It's when people that are scared by other things step out and start encouraging that. I've been to Indiana when Mike Pence was governor and he passed the religious reform and nobody cared. I was more obvious then than I am now. I've been to North Carolina when HB2 right after it passed and nobody cared. People still talk to me. They were very socially accepting. I've even been all over Texas. I mean, you can't name a state except for two, and that's Vermont and Maine, that I haven't been to. And people are very accepting. It's easy to stir people up, but somebody mentioned at the beginning that there's a fear factor there of things that people don't understand, and your mind goes crazy with that. Well, that's true. If anything, I am not saying by any means at all, please, nobody think this. I am not saying that there is no threat out there. There is threats. There is danger. There is people that do want to hurt us. But I think that the point, if anybody takes this from what I'm saying, it's that there are also a lot of people out there who see us as the same as them. You know, they don't care what bathroom we use. They don't care, you know, how we live.
That's really encouraging to hear, because it does feel like sometimes like this must be everyone, because it gets talked about, like Christy said, like on Tucker Carlson, like every day. I was saying something kind of similar to that earlier in the show, that like, I think that when you're talking to one-on-one, and yes, with the disclaimer that no, not everywhere, of course, and you're going to run into people. But when you get face-to-face with people, people are like good. A lot of people are good. A lot of people have a lot of like love in their heart and patience, and they're willing to talk to you. And obviously with precautions in place. But I think, how important do you think it is to have that face-to-face interaction with? Do you think that's helped a lot for that experience you've had?
Well, let me put it to you like this. I see myself as an ambassador. People come up to me and talk to me, and I try to be very open. I try to be very assuring. If somebody has a question, as long as it's not something too personal or too embarrassing, I'll try and give it my best answer, because the more people understand, the less they see a wall between me and them. And it can be scary sometimes revealing yourself like that. It can be scary sometimes when I'll put it to you like this. I knew a lot of trans girls whenever I first came out who were in their own little jail cell. They were so passable, and even their voice, I could not tell. And they were so passable that they were afraid to really come out to anybody because there was so much hate going around at the time. And they would hear from people, you know, if I was to ever come across one of them trans people, you know, and all this other stuff, and it can be scary. And I've seen a lot of them live in that little jail cell in their mind because they were afraid to date. They were afraid to meet people. They were afraid to talk to people. And a lot of people will sit here and wonder, well, your voice sounds awfully male. Yeah, it does, because I've always been afraid of being too passable. And that's one of my fears. I figure as long as there's some kind of red flag up there saying, you know, that I'm trans, I'm different, that's cool. You know, at least it's a better chance of somebody not being sexually threatened, or not sick, but their masculinity threatened later and attacking me. Mm-hmm. And there, like I said, there are certain things about it. Like I said, like being too passable and feeling like you're in your own jail cell. But I don't think that's the major part. I mean,
but
I don't hide who I am. It still surprises me sometimes when people are like, "You're trans?" Hell yeah. What did you think? I swallowed a frog 2 years ago. And
I think that it's good that you are doing that, because you are forging a path for a safer environment for people who are, you know, still just in that age now where they're going to have to make those decisions of whether they can hide themselves or whether they can be open with who they are, or if they're going to hide away this idea that everybody's going to hate them or be rude to them or whatever. So I appreciate the work.
Thank you for
being so accessible for people's questions and doing that, because it's going to make someone else's life easier later on.
I will absolutely admit to anxiously chewing off the nail polish on my fingernails outside of a truck stop in the middle of nowhere, Louisiana, for fear of what that might portend. So I really appreciate you being willing to navigate those spaces bravely and proudly as yourself.
I was that way when I was younger. I've been trans all my life. I come out and then it, you know, something pushed me back in and I come out. And I can sympathize with you on that, Christy, 100%, because I would hide from people. And, you know, I mean, I've been married 32 years and my wife was not accepting of it at first, and it was very hard on her. And over time, you know, I won't go into all that. But you do get to a place where you can come out and, you know, be yourself. But those times when you're in hiding, I used to say, when I came out, I took the teeth out of the bulldog, because after that, it was all bark, no bite. You know, once you come out, there's nothing to hide. And that was probably the hardest thing about coming out, is just accepting that I'm out and I'm not going back and nothing's going to matter no matter what people think. A lot of people talk about they find Jesus and they get this religious experience. Honest to God, I am not lying to you. I swear I will put my hand on the Constitution, whatever you believe, and swear to this. When I finally accepted who I was at the age of 38, that I was going to be trans the rest of my life, either I accept it or I carry it like a brick on my back. Hmm. And when I finally accepted that, it was literally like a religious feeling. It was like a coming to Jesus moment.
It's a born-again moment.
Everything kind of was lifted.
Yeah.
Yes, 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 yeah. Yes. And it was the greatest moment. And it was funny because after that, I quit, excuse my language, giving a shit what anybody thought. It changed.
That's something to aspire to, honestly. I hope to one day as many shits as I do now. And I think it takes a lot of work to get to that point. So
I mean, eventually you run out. I think there must be a finite number.
Whatever happens first.
Eventually you spin them all.
I don't know. I mean, I've kind of come from it learning that I don't care what people say behind my back, because if they don't have the courage to say it to my face, what does it matter? That's an easy thing to say, but it's hard to feel. And then when it hits you, like I said, like a religious moment, and it just washes over you, and it's like, I don't care. People can talk. I have people right now that I talk to, and I'm sure some of them are not my friend. Some of them would stab me in the back first chance, probably talk about me as I'm walking away. I don't care. It does not bother me, because if they ain't got the courage to say it to my face, it doesn't matter. And that's probably one of the craziest things that came from me coming out, was that burden being just lifted off, you know, just like
Amen.
I said, forgive me.
Amen and hallelujah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so good.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Melody, I appreciate
y'all do. Thank you.
We both appreciate it. I was supposed to say, I appreciate so much you calling in and sharing us some of that insight, and also for the very good words of wisdom. So thank you so much for calling in and sharing that with us. And I hope we hear from you again soon.
Yeah, I like that we're going into 2023 with a sense of positivity. I know that last year, I for one, was kind of harping on the negative in a lot of ways. And
it was hard not to.
With good reason. Yeah, sure. Well, do we want to try and very quickly sneak in this very last call before we start to wrap up? I know we're already running a little late. Y'all got time for it?
Let's do it.
I'm here for it. And
all right, let's do it.
More. We can do
it. Yeah, let's move it quickly.
Okay. Neo Shark calling in. From Wisconsin. So we are going to take this call. We'll try to do it quickly, but he is calling in asking the question, is gender blindness a thing?
Ooh, depends on what you mean by gender blindness. What's your thought, Neo? What's going on?
It's a couple things. Like, when other people express, like, I do this, it makes me feel male, I don't have a comparable experience. Like, I don't really view, I understand, like, what gender is, obviously, and I recognize it and what its stereotype is, or not the stereotype, what stereotypical gender norms are. Like, I recognize that, but I've never really looked at a person and kind of thought of them as male or female, because I've always looked at them as, like, an individual, like, the individual characteristics. And so, like, I don't know if it's just from as a result of my upbringing, because, like, I was a nerd, I was ostracized, so, like, I never really got brainwashed by that whole cultural norm of, like, men are this, women are this, and that kind of stuff. I kind of, like, avoided that whole cultural norm by just, like, burying my head in video games and books.
Maybe that's a mark of something that we can all kind of strive for. But as far as answering that, the psychology of that, and, like, these two are going to answer it better than I can. I'm still working through understanding all this myself.
Yeah, I mean, let me just say, in the interest of time, that the term gender blindness is usually something that we refer to as being comparable to, like, racial blindness, or I don't see color. And it can be sort of dismissive.
Part of the reason why I asked.
Yeah. So that particular term or framework we usually associate as being kind of dismissive and a little dickish. But I do.
That's good to know.
Yeah. I do take the question that you're really asking, though, which is like, I don't have a strong sensitivity or concern or an interest in other people's gender or perhaps your own. And there's, you know, certainly nuance to pick apart there. But being agender or being what we might call like a gender spectrum, like having less of a gender, being maybe less sensitive to those kinds of things, I think that that is very much a valid and complicated identity, but one that you might be curious about and want to look into. Kara, what might you add to any of that?
Yeah, this is a fascinating issue for me too. I'm thinking of, I think it was actually an interview that I saw Judith Butler give where they, and I believe they are using they, them pronouns now.
Yes.
Judith Butler has come out as non-binary. And, you know, something that I thought was really fascinating about what they said, given that they're kind of one of the, you know, most well-known, you know, foremost gender theorists who kind of popularized this idea of gender as a performance and, you know, gender as a social construct and something that we're, you know, taught to do. And kind of like you were mentioning, Neo, you know, you grow up kind of swimming in this water of, you know, this is how men are and this is how women are. And some of the work that Butler did was, you know, taking that apart and saying, you know, this is actually a performance. This is not necessarily biological. This is not natural. But something that I found really fascinating in this interview was after they came out as non-binary, they mentioned something like, you know, it occurred to me, you know, somewhat recently that wasn't everyone else's experience of gender. You know, I always felt very disconnected from it. And it was this performance all along. And it turns out it's not that for some other people. And I felt so seen when I read that. And I wonder if maybe that's a little bit of what you're describing too, where it just didn't really resonate with you very much. And I can certainly identify with that. I don't know. Is that kind of what you were talking about?
Partly, I also think it has, like I said, it has to do with my upbringing. I've read literally hundreds of novels, fantasy, sci-fi. I've been slaves. I've been like tyrants. I've been male. I've been female. And so I think partly that kind of inoculated me to the whole gender isn't a social construct. It's like people are one way and not just people, a collection of things and experiences.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. People are more than the expectations that we might arbitrarily assign to them.
I wonder if it has like a little bit to do with like when you were interacting with somebody, if your ability to like picture what their experience is like. And so you're seeing kind of the world through their eyes, like you would in a novel, experiencing things, imagining and visualizing what their life would be like. And when you're looking from the inside of the eyes out, you're not really perceiving so much of like the physical characteristics or how they're presenting. So maybe that is something to do with it too, that's how you see people. I think that's a good thing.
I might just kind of,
I want them to be
sure. I'll take something that was said in the chat and kind of adapt it just to say that I think if we consider gender to be something of a performance, we can also recognize that a lot of people put a lot of feeling into that performance. They really resonate with their character. They connect with some of those ideas. Yeah. And other people are able to go out on stage and deliver that performance and have no real empathy or like meaningful or somatic connection with the person that they are acting as. And I think that that is one way that agender people maybe conceive of themselves. And so if you feel like, well, sure, I can act like a dude if I'm supposed to, but I don't necessarily connect with that performance, that may be something to be curious about or a identity to look into anyhow.
Yeah, like I called in a couple weeks ago about like some BDSM stuff, and like I call it a uniform. I have a nice, I identify as a top in the BDSM community, and I have what I consider my uniform. It's just black slacks, a nice blue long sleeve dress shirt. And I know that's traditionally described to masculinity, but to me, it's not about masculine or feminine. It's about the fucking aesthetic. Like, regardless of the gender or the sex of the person who wears a similar aesthetic, I think it's fucking hot.
Yeah, I get it. What you're saying. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, all of these things are arbitrary constructs that we struggle to keep in our heads and struggle even more to communicate into words to other people. I mean, we have satellites out in outer fucking space that are ensuring that somehow I'm able to sit in my office and communicate this information all across the globe. It's remarkable. And yet, when we are trying to explore our own identities and then communicate those identities to other people, we are just sacks of meat pushing air through our mouth holes and vibrating pieces of our body in weird ways in order to construct sounds and words and sentences and ideas. So yeah, the hardware and the software are a little bit lacking when we try to explore these things. And you know what? It's awesome, right? Like, this is life.
Yeah.
It's gross. It's weird. It's messy. It makes no sense, but it's ours.
Yeah,
and here we are in 2023 doing it together.
Yeah. I refer to like human bodies as meat machines. And so one of my favorite sayings that I came up with is ride the meat machine. Don't let the meat machine ride you. And don't give in to your impulses or your instincts. Like, control those and control yourself.
It's a very Gnostic take, I can say.
I mean, we may have a new t-shirt idea.
Also because I'm a huge mech fan. So the idea of riding a meat machine kind of synergizes.
That sounds great. Okay, Neil, thank you for calling in. And I think that was a good discussion. I learned a little bit more. And I think I was grasping onto like how you kind of clarified that question. But it's good to know that like saying something like gender blindness is kind of very, it's equated to saying like, oh, I don't see color. Like, right. It's kind of similar.
Or can be. I mean, obviously the tone and context.
Proceed with caution,
else.
Right?
Yeah.
So Neo, I'm going to let you go here because we are over time now and we are going to finish our show. And I think the next thing we're going to do is check in on that poll that we put at the beginning of the episode. So the question was, will 2023 be a better year for sex positivity? And Chrissy, I just refreshed and it's actually 79%.
Oh, okay.
It went down just a little bit, but it's still overall positive. 79% say yes.
I did not expect that response, honestly. And honestly, I didn't necessarily expect for my own thoughts and takes to be as positive as they were, or for y'all's takes to be as positive.
We really had a journey this evening because we were started and it was good to see you. And then we went down into the negatives and then we just have been on an upward climb ever since.
Yeah,
so I appreciated it.
I think that's
what the year will be like.
There's reason for hopefulness, and I'm so excited. So definitely. Thank you all for being here, Kara. Thank you so much for jumping in at the last moment. And Aaron, let me let you kind of wrap us up for the night.
Sure. So if you want to keep up with what's happening at the ACA, you can check out our website, which I believe has been newly formatted or fixed up lately. It's very fancy and snazzy, at atheist-community.org, or you can email us at the show at sex@atheist-community.org or email the ACA at tv@atheist-community.org. You can find this content in audio form only at tiny.cc/AEN podcast. So they have all the other programs that are also put on by the Atheist Community of Austin. So that's a great place for maybe our caller earlier who's a truck driver or something like that. Keep you up to date on all the shows that we have every week. If you want to connect with other people in the community, there's a Facebook group, Facebook Secular Sexuality Fan Run Group. So that is a community page and it's run by people who are fans of and supporters of our program here, and it's just another place to find other people, or if you have questions like what we talked about tonight, you can maybe run it by somebody on there first. The second place to do something very similar is the Discord. The Discord is also fan run, tiny.cc/ac discord, and I'm trying to do better about being on Discord more often. I'm not very good at it, but I'm trying to, because I know a lot of people do go and hang out there from all the different programs here, so it's a good place to kind of catch up with everybody.
I feel your struggle. I'm working on it too.
I'm not a big Discorder either. But Atheist Community of Discord put on their second annual Meet the ACA event earlier this week, and it was a good time. Our friend Sin Sage is going to be doing an interview in the Atheist Community of Discord, I believe, this coming Tuesday. So there's good programming. There's good conversation. It's a good time.
Yeah. It's if you go on there, it's good.
You have to log in.
You have to get started. And speaking of other people who make these programs happen, we would be remiss if we didn't check in with our crew cam.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you to all of our crew. Hi, everybody.
All our hardworking folks. Thank you all so much.
All those lovely faces.
And the folks who kept the lights on and kept everything coming out over the holidays as we were taking some time off. The people who edited those shows and put together some really incredible graphics that I think are absolutely worth being excited about.
Yeah. Another way that we can keep this show afloat is through our merch. tiny.cc/merch.ACA. I personally, and I shouldn't say this, but I also work with another program here at the ACA. I do think that the secular sexuality shirts are a little more spicy. And I think that if you're looking to, you know, get conversations going, there's some good ones in there. And I think we have a monthly special shirt as
trade
well
in,
over there. So check it out every month and get your special edition shirt.
Yeah, trade in your religious shackles for fuzzy handcuffs. I love it.
That's right.
Well, I know that we are kind of rushing out the door here, but there were a handful of questions that we didn't get to. Any final thoughts, any last predictions that you want to make sure to go on the record with? Anything that you want to get out there on the interweb so we have recorded for posterity?
I think the last thing I would like to say is just that book that I talked about earlier, and I will put it in the show notes. It's called The Tough Standard, and the author, I have it written down here. I should have scrolled back up faster. The author is Ronald F. Levant and Shauna Pryor. So a lot of the stuff I was talking about and a lot of the stuff we were all discussing tonight is in that book. So that's my resource for the week.
Yeah, I love that. I love your book recommendations. I'm going to read that. I added it to my list too. And as far as predictions go, I would say, besides what we already talked about, you know, I think we have spent a whole episode, you know, without talking much about, you know, some of the struggle that we have, you know, experienced the last few years was dealing with, you know, unexpected medical situations. And I think that, you know, one of my hopeful predictions for this year is that we have spent the last few years spending a lot of money on medical research. And I think we're going to have some really cool medical breakthroughs in terms of whether it's therapies that people need, whether it's antiviral medications that can affect people's sexual health. I think that, you know, the fact that we've spent the last few years thinking a lot about health and healthcare and putting a whole lot of money into research, into treatments for things, you know, I think that we can look forward to a lot of really cool breakthroughs that can improve our health and our lives, and including our sexual health and lives in the near future. And I'm looking forward to all the exciting things that are going to happen with that this year. So fingers crossed for some good stuff coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I will just under the wire make my prediction. I do believe that OnlyFans will not move forward with removing porn the way that they have talked about. I do think that porn will still exist on OnlyFans, but I think that OnlyFans will be a bellwether for what is going on in the larger trend, where there's like increased access to porn, increased ability for people to perform in porn, and that porn will become increasingly restricted in the scope of what it is allowed to be. We'll see a lot more pinups, a lot more quote like Playboy style content, and a decrease in like Hustler or like that early days of the internet hardcore German dungeon sex type of pornography. I think that will continue to be demonized, and I do worry about what that could mean for sex worker rights and for a number of these other things that we're talking about. But we will see at the end of the year where all of these things end up. So thank you all so much for being here. I appreciate everybody listening to us as we go a little bit long with our wild and out there predictions, please send us your emails, leave us your comments, like let us know what you're predicting for 2023. And I guess whether you are a optimist, a pessimist, or just a urologist, now's as good a time as any to give yourself a big old orgasm, or better yet, give somebody else one.
Watch Talk Heathen live Sundays at 1 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/ytth and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callth.